Good afternoon. My name is Anne Caval, and on behalf of the Breast Cancer Education Association Board and volunteers, I welcome you to the BCEA webinar education series. I encourage you to grab a pen and paper, as there will be plenty of good information shared in the next hour. Today, we are especially pleased to announce the launch of a new series of webinars exploring the breast cancer experience in Minnesota communities with unequal cancer burdens. In each session of this series, we strive to help each community share its voice so that we all have a better understanding of the burden of breast cancer in their community and the unique cultural features that may be barriers or help to support women in their journey. We are very grateful for the gracious collaboration of the Fond du Lac Band of Lake Superior Chippewa and the American Indian Cancer Foundation for today's webinar. Our next Sharing Our Voices webinar will be in early 2018 with Dr. Lonnie Neal from Mayo discussing the breast cancer burden and journey in the African American community. Today we have participants joining us in two ways, via webcast or by phone. For those connected via webcast, please follow along with the slideshow on your screen. Also, for those connected via the webcast, you should see a box to the left-hand side of the slides where you'll be able to submit questions during the Q&A portion near the end of this session. This year, the BCEA continues to expand our mission, providing frequent and easy-to-access breast cancer education resources. Our educational programming promises to encourage, engage, and empower our community in a variety of ways, including webinars such as this one offered throughout the year. Our signature Education Fall Conference that was held on October 7th of 2017 in St. Paul featured topics such as a look inside a developing tumor, living well beyond diagnosis, triple negative breast cancer treatments, a new feature which was a mobile mammography unit on site, and many roundtables that connected participants on a variety of important breast cancer topics. If you are unable to attend this year, we hope to see you next year. We are working to set the 2018 conference date for early next October, and we'll be sharing the date as soon as it is finalized. Please also tap into our ongoing resources on our website and social media channels, which are available 24/7. If you're unable to attend any of our previous webinars, recordings of these sessions are available on the BCEA website at www.breastcancereducation.org under the webinar tab. This is a great way to easily access valuable information at your convenience. If you have not done so already, please be sure to connect with us on social media. We regularly share and foster discussion on the latest news and resources in breast cancer education, diagnosis, treatment, and survivorship. We encourage you to also share what you learned today using hashtag BCEA webinar. Please also be sure to keep your eye out for more information on our next webinar set for December 5th, which will cover 3D mammography. Many more webinars are also planned for 2018, and we will share specific information on upcoming webinars as soon as complete details are available. And now I'd like to introduce the speakers for today's webinar. We have Lois Brown, nurse educator at the American Indian Cancer Foundation. Lois Brown is an enrolled member of the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe, located in northern Minnesota. Lois began her career in preventative health, working for her tribe as an exercise physiologist before moving to the Minneapolis area and working with the urban American Indian population. Lois worked 9 years in an urban American Indian clinic in patient education and quality improvement and has recently transitioned into a new role as the nurse educator at the American Indian Cancer Foundation. Lois has her BA in exercise physiology from the College of St. Scholastica and her master's degree of nursing from the University of Minnesota. Christine Davis is an enrolled member of the Fond du Lac Band of Superior Chippewa, and lives in northern Minnesota. She has worked in her community's health division since 1994 in varied nursing roles. In 2015, she became a family nurse practitioner and currently serves as the medical clinic coordinator in addition to her provider responsibilities. Her passion for cancer care started many years before her own personal experience with breast cancer. She has experienced most areas of cancer care from a patient care perspective and as a patient herself. Her passion to assist her community in their journey motivates her to share her story and help educate the need for improved cancer screening in her community. Welcome, Lois and Chris.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So I guess we'll start with the goals of the presentation. Lois, do you want to start out with that?
I can do that. Thank you, Anne. First of all, I just want to start out by thanking you for inviting us to share in this presentation. I know that it is an honor for Chris and I to be sharing today, and it's definitely a privilege for me to be presenting alongside Chris today. I just want to say Anin Bujou, welcome to everyone who's listening today and joining us as we share experiences and knowledge on breast cancer in our American Indian communities. The goals of today's presentation, we want to describe the current breast cancer burden in Minnesota, our American Indian and Alaska Native communities. We also want to discuss the unique barriers that our American Indian and Alaska Native women face to prevention and detection, treatment, and survivorship. Another goal would be to provide cultural characteristics that influence screening, share personal perspectives as a provider and breast cancer survivor, and that will be Chris, and then also identify some solutions that are culturally appropriate to increase our screening. Just a little background about sovereign nations in Minnesota and across the United States. There are over 560 federally recognized tribes or sovereign nations that are across the United States. 11 of these tribes are located right here in Minnesota. Located more to the northern half of Minnesota are the Anishinaabe or the Ojibwe tribes. We have Red Lake, Boys Fort, Grand Portage, White Earth, Leech Lake, Fond du Lac, and Mille Lacs. And then located more in the southern part of Minnesota are the four Dakota or Sioux tribes, Shakopee, Mittewakanton Sioux, the Upper Sioux, the Lower Sioux, and Prairie Island. All of the 560-plus federally recognized tribes across the nation are sovereign nations, and that means that we're recognized by the U.S. government as nations within the nation of the United States. There's a government-to-government relationship between the tribes and the United States. This is also an exciting time with huge movements across the nation, with American Indians returning to our languages, eating traditional foods, and practicing cultural traditions. If you would like to learn more about any of the tribes in Minnesota or across the nation, I would encourage you to start by visiting their tribal websites. It wasn't until the 1990s, early 2000s, that we could compare cancer incident rates and cancer mortality rates in the American Indian population with any sort of accuracy, due in large part to racial misclassification of the American Indians. However, in that time frame, the early 1990s, early 2000s, the Indian Health Service was able to link its patient registry with central cancer registries and the National Death Index, which provided a more accurate, comprehensive overview of cancer incidence and cancer mortality in the American Indian population. So this slide that we're seeing right now shows us that for the American Indians in the Northern Plains region, the most commonly diagnosed cancer in American Indian women is breast cancer. Breast cancer is usually diagnosed at a later stage, and that is due most often to not being screened. The second leading cause of cancer death for women is breast cancer. American Indians in the Northern Plains experience some of the highest cancer diagnoses and death rates in the U.S. This slide shows the American Indian cancer burden in general. In all regions, cancer is the number one cause of death for women and the second leading cause of death for men, with heart disease being number one. The most commonly diagnosed cancer for women is breast cancer. This slide speaks to data looking at female breast cancer by race and ethnicity in Minnesota. You can see in kind of the more red area, we have the American Indian Alaska Native statewide. This is looking at Minnesota in particular. And then also in more of like the light orange, kind of yellowish color is the AIAN CHESDA. CHESDA is Contract Health Service Delivery Area, is what that stands for, the CHSDA. And that population includes counties which contain federally recognized tribal lands or areas that are adjacent to the tribal lands. The CHESDA residence is used by the Indian Health Service to determine eligibility for services that are not directly available within the Indian Health Service.
So, Lois, this is Carissa. I'll speak to this slide. So I just want to outline the breast cancer facts. Most of us are used to seeing the numbers that we see on the left-hand side. 1 in 8 women will get breast cancers in their lifetime. That's kind of a national campaign that everybody should be familiar with. But some of the data I want to point out here is that if you look on the right, American Indian women still have huge disparities. You know, we have a 10% higher death rate and a 7% incident rate of cancers amongst white women. And then also, you know, that we also get diagnosed at a later stage. So that's a huge disparity and, again, speaks to the need for earlier screening. I'll hand it back to you.
According to the American Cancer Society, more than 3 out of 4 of all breast cancers occur in women age 50 or older. So we know that as our women get older, our risk for breast cancer increases. And Chris will share other risk factors of breast cancer.
So, of course, we all know that just being female puts everybody at higher risk for breast cancers. In Native Americans or American Indians, you know, I don't know if there's a single cause, and we're not sure kind of what is the, you know, biggest risk factor. But as you can see, you know, this list is vast. We also know that prevention is key, so early detection is the best. We know mammography is the best tool, and that we're seeing higher survival rates the earlier the detection. But only about 78% of women in Minnesota have regular mammograms. So part of our efforts, you know, in our community here at Fond du Lac is just getting the information out there and getting them in many different ways. So whether it's outreach in the community or at powwows or in the clinic, the more we just normalize the conversation, the better chance we see of patients getting mammograms. We feel like our outreach isn't just limited to the exam room, but our patients actually take the information they learn from us and then share it out with the community, and then, you know, they talk amongst each other, which is also important. So why mammograms? We know that, you know, that is the easiest way for us to find cancers. We find that people who are diagnosed in our community often do not even have a family history of the disease and don't have risk factors that would consider them high risk. So having a conversation about just getting the screening is often one of confusion, because often women think that you have to have risk factors in order to get a mammogram. And Lois, I'll have you speak to this one.
Yeah, this slide talks a little bit about the mammography utilization amongst our American Indian women and other races as well. You can see that about in the last 2 years, about 69% of our American Indian women have had a mammogram. Again, early detection is key, and mammography utilization is the best that we have to screen for breast cancer. The five-year survival rate is the percentage of people who live at least 5 years after being diagnosed with breast cancer, and many people do live much longer than 5 years. The outlook for women with breast cancer varies by stage of cancer. Survival rates are higher for women with earlier stage cancers. The five-year survival rate for women with stage zero or stage one breast cancer is close to 100%. For women with stage two breast cancer, their survival rate drops to about 93%. And the survival rate for stage three breast cancers is about 72%, but women can still be successfully treated. Breast cancers that have spread to other parts of the body are more difficult to treat and tend to have a more poor outlook. Metastatic or stage four breast cancers have a survival rate of about 22%.
Just an overview of the breast cancer screening guidelines. This is an area that sometimes can cause confusion, and I'm speaking to that as a provider. We know that American Cancer Society, recommends women age 40 to 44 to have a discussion about having that choice to have a mammography, and then also continue with these guidelines. Part of the problem with this as a provider is that you also have different guidelines, and amongst providers, those recommendations could be different. With that being said, I see that this is somewhere where patients get confused. So even providers in the practice that I practice in may have different views on it, which leads to us giving different recommendations to patients. Thus causing confusion on kind of what guidelines should they follow, who should they listen to. And so I really just encourage women to become kind of advocates for themselves, to have the information and, to stress the importance of just making that decision for themselves. In addition to, even that confusion amongst guidelines, recommendations for mammograms. There's also individual and system barriers to screening for our population. Our patients often, have competing demands. It's hard for them to get away from work to come to the doctor to get their breast exam, to get their referral to the mammography site. There could be daycare issues. There could be loss of income to take that time away from work. We often see that there is not necessarily solely a lack of mistrust of outside agencies, but a hesitancy for people to go outside of our facility for care. So they kind of trust us and trust us with all areas of their cares and stuff like that. So it's hard to want them to go out and get the mammogram. And, if it's a service off of our reservation. There's also cultural belief differences. So maybe people don't believe that they want to be diagnosed with cancer to even know that information. So also having those conversations with our patients and being able to understand where people are coming from culturally in regards to cancer screening is very important. And, of course, logistics. We don't have as many problems with logistics because we are located right outside Duluth, Minnesota, which is up in northern Minnesota by the tip of Lake Superior. So we have bigger hospitals in the area, but other reservations are more isolated, so just logistically getting to have their mammogram is a big deal. Here's some of the, beliefs in the community regarding cancer. you know, it's not a topic that is easily discussed or brought up. Sometimes there's beliefs that, you know, if you get diagnosed with cancer, that that's a death sentence. So changing that thought process takes some time, and, you know, you have to build that trust up and everything with your patients. And there's fear that even just having any diagnostic testing or treatment for your disease could cause the disease to become worse. Against socioeconomic issues that affect our patient population, no insurance, homelessness, unemployment, chemical dependency that gets in their way of taking care of their health, competing survival priorities. Patients sometimes are taking care of families or just trying to get to work, and the last thing they think about are themselves or taking care of themselves. Lack of knowledge and awareness regarding prevention activities or knowing to go in regularly for screening. And again, mistrust of the healthcare system, lack of insurance, fear of diagnosis, and of course, cultural issues. Part of the cultural issues I guess I want to speak to is especially women in our community tend to be the caretakers of families. So again, I see that they put their health last. They worry about their kids and grandkids and the needs that they need to have met before they worry about their own. And then secondly, talking a little bit about traditional health practices. And with that, I mean, I just feel like providers need to be aware of, you know, different traditional beliefs among the patients you're working with, because they can be different amongst tribes, but even in the same communities. So just being able to have that conversation with a patient openly to see where that impacts their healthcare decision making.
Chris, can you tell us a little about one of your bullet points is who makes the health decisions in the family? Can you talk a little bit more about that?
I can. I feel like, again, you know, I don't know. Women take care of their families, and so I feel like, you know, they make the decisions for their kids or for their grandkids or, you know, spouses, significant others sometimes, but then forget to make those decisions about themselves often, or, you know, they're just more worried about the other members in their families. I don't, you know, like I know other cultures, you have to go to the male or the spouse makes a decision. That's not necessarily something I see in my community. That does not mean that it doesn't happen in another Native community here in Minnesota or throughout the United States. This is only what I see here at Fond du Lac.
Thank you for that clarification.
And Lois, do you have anything to add on that?
No, just that I would agree with what you said, Chris.
Okay. I'll move forward. I mean, I think for Lois and myself, for sure, as a provider and working for a tribe, is just knowing what your state resources are for your patients, whether here in Minnesota or throughout the United States. We're always trying to connect them to either insurance coverage, SAGE program, somehow to get their, not just their mammograms, but their other cancer screening. So I guess this is just a plug to make sure everybody's aware of all the resources available in their state. So this is me. You know, I feel like I should, first of all, you know, kind of thank you for taking the time to listen to not just my story, but also what I feel like is a unique perspective I can now bring to patients. I'm a four-year cancer survivor. I feel like I'm able to understand the confusion that patients experience upon diagnosis of a breast cancer or any kind of cancers. I was diagnosed in 2013, and I had been a nurse for 20-some years, and I feel like I was thrown for a loop and actually felt like I struggled through the system outside of my primary care clinic. And I feel like I had all the resources available to me. I had colleagues that knew who to send me to, what specialists I should go to, who is the best surgeon, who is the best breast doctor in the area, the best oncologist. And I still felt like my process took a long time for me to feel like I had a good knowledge base to make a good decision. It took me about, from the time of diagnosis until my lumpectomy, about 3 months, because I was trying to navigate through the healthcare system of making appointments, talking to the right people, and getting my care. And if I feel like I was lost and falling through cracks with all the resources I had available to me, I just can't imagine how patients who aren't used to the healthcare system must struggle. And I had to work hard to always find the answers to my questions. And I also think that sometimes patients being told that they have cancer, you don't even know what questions to ask. So I feel like I can share that with patients now. It's not, you know, I'm not happy that this happened, but it does, it just makes me feel humble that I'm able to offer this as a perspective and help our patients dealing with breast cancer in our community or any kind of cancer to navigate our system. Again, these are just me trying to kind of get my story out there. I didn't realize I'd be okay with sharing my story publicly, but, this year is the first year I'm actually doing it because, as you can see, early detection saved my life. You know, I'm 4 years out, and I had no family history. And the more I share that story with my community, I feel like that's going to help get our screening rates and early detection, improved in our area. Again, you know, there's a reason we do it. You know, everybody, wants to be there for their families. We see that, you can survive cancer. There's very good cure rates in early detection. So this is my goal. For our strategies here at Fond du Lac, I'll speak to this, and Lois, you can please add on to the areas that you guys are working in, because they work throughout the United States. So here at Fond du Lac, we have peer education. Again, I've been getting out in the community talking about it. We have cancer outreach workers that will go out and have talks in the community. We try to use as much culturally appropriate or designed pamphlets as we can, and that's where ACAS, and that's where Lois works, is a fantastic resource. They have tons of information that is Native specific. We do the MammoBus. We have a partnership with the Shakopee tribe here in Minnesota. They have a mobile mammography unit that we bring up to our clinic sites once a year. We have seen nothing but improvement in our screening numbers starting, I think we started tracking in about 2013, and up until just this year, our numbers keep on growing. We do birthday reminder letters to women, asking them to come in to have a discussion about mammogram screening. It's part of our clinic flow, so every morning our physicians and their nursing staff get together and they do huddles and identify patients that need their mammograms and provide education and hopefully referrals to get these done. And again, since 2013, our annual screening rates overall have gone from 37% in our organization to about 46% in 2016. And so we're hoping just to continue to watch that number rise. Lois, do you have anything else to add?
Yeah, those are all really great strategies that you highlighted in a community level, Chris. There are several strategies to not only increase awareness for our breast cancer in our population, but to also engage our people to actionable steps. And some of the next slides that we'll share will show some of those steps. is an infographic that was created by the American Indian Cancer Foundation. It's an example of one of the culturally relevant infographics that we have to help reach our population. As you can see, it briefly states some risk factors associated with breast cancer, screening guidelines, and what one can do in order to lower the risk for breast cancer. The Pink Shawls Project, it came about when the American Indian Cancer Foundation was a young organization. No one was really talking about cancer at the time, and the Pink Shawls Project was a strategy to bring awareness of breast cancer in a culturally relevant way to a very popular community event, powwows, and that way we were able to reach more people at one time. And the Pink Shawls Project helped open communication about breast cancer in our communities. So the Pink Shawls educated American Indian women about breast health while also providing an opportunity for these women to create their own pink shawl. These women could keep their shawls or often gift them to others who have battled breast cancer and were survivors. Creating and gifting a pink shawl brought healing in a different way. They are made to honor and remember community members who battled breast cancer.
So is this Pink Shawls Project, is that local to Minnesota, or do you know if that's expanded outside the state?
Yeah, so the Pink Shawls program over the years, so it started back in about, 2011 or so. Since then, the American Indian Cancer Foundation has worked in various communities to provide train the trainer. So the idea would be that these communities can take this project forward and hold these hold this project within their community and sustainable and keep it moving forward. I believe at this time the main areas would be within the Minnesota area or surrounding communities.
So we do have other folks that are outstate Minnesota. Is there some place that they can go to get more information on this particular project?
Sure. I think the best thing that they can do is share their information, or I can share mine, and then we can talk about seeing if there's a way that we can connect them with the right person.
Great. Thank you.
Sure. These are just a couple pictures showing pink shawl in the community. The top picture show women at a Minnesota Swarm game. The Minnesota Swarm is our national lacrosse team. And at the bottom, there is a breast cancer panel picture with the pink shawl up in Boys Fort in northern Minnesota. So over 100 women have attended a Pink Shawls event through the American Indian Cancer Foundation. Over 100 shawls were gifted to women with breast cancer and survivors. And the Pink Shawls participants and recipients have been honored each year at the American Indian Cancer Foundation's annual Powwow for Hope event, as well as other various events in Minnesota.
When is the annual Powwow for Hope?
It is usually in early May, so I believe this year's is May. It's usually the first Saturday, I believe.
Thank you.
Okay, I got confirmation it's May 5th of 2018. Yeah.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Another strategy that the American Indian Cancer Foundation has worked toward to raise awareness about breast cancer with a call to action in our communities is using social media. I don't know if you guys have seen the Indigenous Pink, the hashtag Indigenous Pink social media campaign, maybe through Facebook. This is a picture of the banner that was used in this year's campaign. And the goal of this national campaign is to spread awareness, to educate all Indigenous people on the importance of early detection. And participants are encouraged to wear pink and then share their photos on Facebook using the hashtag Hashtag Indigenous Pink. This year, we added a frame that you could use with your Facebook picture. And this is just showing that this is a national campaign. The picture is from 2015, but it does show the Portland Area Indian Health Board supporting Indigenous Pink awareness information. And then this picture shows students down in the University of Oklahoma participating in Indigenous Pink Day. In 2016, we reached out to American Indian models, celebrities, and spokespeople to help spread breast cancer awareness. So you can see that's the 1491 group, and then also there's a Native American model as well, helping to show support and spread awareness. To share a little data on this campaign, in 2017, 11,000 individuals were exposed to information via the 2017 Indigenous Pink event page on Facebook. What that means is the event showed up on their Facebook newsfeed. Out of that 11,000, 1,800 actually took action to view the page, which is an engagement rate of 16%. And to put that into context, 2% on most social media posts is considered good engagement. We won the 2017 CreativeCampaign.org Award from the Minnesota Council of Nonprofits for using technology and communication in inspiring, effective, and creative ways. Well, this is just a collage showing others participating in Indigenous Pink 2017.
In addition to the models and the famous people promoting Indigenous Pink, this is the Fond du Lac medical team, so that's my famous team that I get to work with every day. And I feel being part of this campaign is super important to help raise awareness in our own community, but of course nationwide. The reason, you know, like this medical team is getting bigger and bigger of the number of people that wear pink on this day each year, but wearing pink on that day makes your patients question, what's that about? Tell me about Indigenous Pink. What does it mean? And it just affords us an opportunity to open up and have that conversation with our patients and start normalizing the conversation about breast cancer screening. So this is a fantastic effort. And here's a plug to the famous Fond du Lac crew.
Looks good, Chris. So this slide talks a little bit about our Indigenous Pink Leadership Program as well. The main goal for this program is capacity building. This program strives to mobilize community health and clinic systems within our tribal and urban communities to develop the necessary capacity and skills to support stronger, more effective breast health outcomes for American Indian women throughout Minnesota. So three strategies that this program will kind of work toward is group breast health education delivered sort of more as train the trainer to advance community health capacity, community health and clinic linkages to enhance screening access, and then also call to action education resources geared toward American Indian women, like that infographic that was created for breast health. Chris, do you want to talk about your partnership with the Mammo Bus?
Absolutely. Thanks, Lois. So this was a mobile mammography unit I mentioned earlier in the presentation. So this is through the Shakopee tribe in southern Minnesota. They come visit us once a year. The nice thing about this partnership is, you know, it just happens every year. Everybody's in contact. They come up. They spend about 3 days at each of our clinic sites. One is in our Duluth site, and then one on the reservation. And we screen up to, well, as high as 115 women each year. So that's pretty significant in our community. The nice thing about this partnership is that it's kind of a one-stop shop for our patients. They come in, they get their breast exams, they get their mammogram right there, and then we contact them with the results in the next few days. They don't have to take extra time off of work to come see us on the reservation at the clinic and then get a referral to an outside organization, take more time off of work, and, you know, go get the mammogram at the local hospital and then come back and get the results. It's just kind of a time saver and a fantastic relationship with other tribes. Again, you can see, you know, just our partnership with SAGE also. I forgot to mention that as part of our mobile mammography events. We also invite SAGE, which is a state organization. I'm not sure if all the states in the United States have it, that help pay for mammograms for people who are uninsured, underinsured, and, of course, for communities that have American Indian, Alaska Native women. So we have that unique partnership. They're sitting at the event with us, sharing information with women. And I just feel like this speaks to the importance of collaboration and networking and having your partnerships in place, because we all kind of support each other to help educate the community on these screening needs. They also help kind of look at your clinical system. When I look at how we do things here from the medical clinic perspective, and I'm talking from the management side of it right now, is I always think it's important for us to kind of pull a team of staff together and walk through our system the way a patient has to walk through our system. So kind of being a secret shopper in your own organization and do this periodically to identify barriers or gaps or, you know, places where patients fall through even our own system because we have become such a large organization, you know, and making sure we are capturing the attention of everybody, you know, in every department or everybody that plays a piece in getting women screened for their mammograms. It's more than just me as a provider. It's more than just the person taking the mammography. You know, we have registration people. We have nursing staff. We have referral and insurance issues. So there's just many players involved just to get a patient to get a mammogram. So it's important periodically to pull them all together to be able to kind of, you know, walk through your system and your patient's eyes and make their access to mammograms easier for them as much as you can, because that will just improve the success of it happening.
So we do have a question about, do you have a script for the mammogram? I'm not sure exactly what they mean by that, but you may know better. And then there were additional questions. What happens if there's a positive mammogram test, and do you refer them to an oncologist?
Absolutely. So two things. You know, we're also, so we have the mobile mammography, and yes, if we do get positives there, those results come back to us as a primary care provider, and we do the follow-ups, whether it's additional views that need to be had. We refer them out. Yes, we connect them with oncologists once it gets to that point, but yes. And SAGE will help with some of those costs if patients are underinsured or uninsured, but, you know, there are also other coverage options. And I can't remember the second part of that question.
So do you have a script for the program?
The script.
Or for the mammogram, I'm sorry.
For our mammogram birthday reminder letters, yes, we have a CAN letter that goes out to all our patients. As far as a script coming in, no. And again, that speaks to, you know, each provider conversation that happens with patients and kind of where they are with their recommendations, whether they're recommending starting at age 50 or whether they're recommending starting at age 40. So we even see that difference amongst our own providers here on the reservation.
Excellent. Thank you.
And I think Lois and I can both speak to this last one, the importance of just working with each other and that we're helping each other. We all have vested interests in, you know, just trying to improve the health disparities in our communities. So here at Fond du Lac, we have a cancer team that is incredibly large, and it, the name for it is Wadukage, which means they help each other. And this cancer team has professionals and community members and survivors and hospice workers and other outside agencies that work to, you know, help improve the cancer care provided at the Fond du Lac community. And that's just at a local level. We also have, you know, ACAF, where Lois is from, and many other outside organizations part of this team to help us improve our care to our community. So I just want to highlight the importance of, you know, networking with as many organizations as you can that are going to help support your cause. And Lois, I don't know if you want to add to that.
Yeah, just to add that ACAF does sit on the coalition for the Wadukage, and we do the evaluation for the program as well. We're able to offer those services.
Perfect. And that's kind of the wrap-up of our presentation, and we're open to any questions anybody may have.
And we have several. So one of the first ones is, have you had patients refuse cancer treatment? And if so, what do you do to encourage them to seek treatment?
Oof, that's a tough one. I know I've heard of stories. I haven't myself as a provider experienced that, but we have had that conversation. Or, you know, I've had providers tell me they've had that conversation with patients. So, yeah, we have had people refuse cancer treatments. And, you know, I think you just support them as much as you can, connect them to their resources, you know, either, you know, with an oncologist to talk about survival rates or treatment options. Or, you know, just kind of making it patient-centered care and connecting them with whatever resources based off their conversation.
Excellent. Thank you. So today we've heard about some of the unique barriers that American Indian women face around breast cancer, screening, and care. Can you speak to the unique cultural strengths that support a woman going through this journey?
I can. I feel like supporting each other, women sharing their stories, cancer survivors sharing their stories in their own communities, that makes us unique. Our community is really relationship-based or family-based, and I feel the more I share my story, that just gives me the opportunity to help another woman through the journey, through diagnosis or even screening. And the minute you kind of tell them you have a personal perspective on it, and it just kind of builds that trust immediately. And so I think that's unique. You know, we take the time to develop those relationships with our community and our patients, and which is super important to our patients, and allows them to build trust in us, you know, wanting to provide the best care for them.
Thank you. And I encourage everyone to keep posting questions because we do have a little bit of time left. I have at least two others right now. And the first one would be to Lois. And Lois, are you able to share with us the some future initiatives from the American Indian Cancer Foundation?
Sure. I think that one of the exciting thing that's going on here, we, you know, are based out of Minnesota, and we have done a lot of work with partnering with our tribal and urban health programs to help in ways that we can to decrease the cancer burden. And with funding we have from the CDC, we're just in the initial phases of it, but we will be working to go national with that and looking at the urban Indian health programs nationally. And working with them to help increase breast and cervical cancer screenings.
Thank you. And Chris, I understand that bringing the mobile mammography van, or commonly referred to as the Mammobus, has resulted in many more women getting screened. I think it's around 85 women that were screened in 2017, or in June of 2017. How is this event tailored to meet the needs of women from Fond du Lac?
I think the important thing about this is not only are all our partnerships there, we have American Cancer Society present at our events. We have our own cancer outreach worker and all the outreach that we do in regards to that locally. Our SAGE partnership, which is our state organization that helps get the message out. But I think what's really important is that we staff the bus with our own providers and our own staff. So the nurses are out there, and our community sees the familiar faces and are more apt to just signing up to, if they happen to be driving by and see the bus there and see a familiar face, they will stop by, which I think results in increased screening once they kind of make sure that, you know, they've been connected with a local resource. So I think that helps, you know, and then just being able to provide that education one-on-one. And, of course, it's, you know, culturally sensitive and specific. And that also is just super accepted by the community.
Excellent. Thank you so much. So we just want to gracious thanks to our speakers, Lois and Chris, and for everyone who joined us today. Again, please share what you learned today via our social media channels, and please plan to join us on our next webinar on December 5th. Thank you very much.
Thank you.